It's truly mind-boggling, and that's why I say the level of incompetence and the impact of this is so vast that it cannot simply be incompetence. It must be a deliberate effort with instructions to the very top of that part of the police force, probably from the minister down.
I have with me Jonathan Fouchier, who is the chairperson of the, wait for it, South African Arms and Ammunition Dealers Association. And we often think that when you talk about someone dealing in something, it's something bad. And when you add arms and ammunition to it, it comes with perhaps certain perceptions. But that is not the case, because the firearm dealers play a very important role in giving us access to firearms. They're often champions of firearm rights. They come across many interesting firearms and interesting challenges in the firearms environment. And Jonathan is here to explain to us what the Dealers Association does, both in terms of the regulatory environment, what its function is with interfacing with government, and what it can offer you as the consumer, because obviously if you want to get a firearm, a licensed firearm, let's remember that, you must go to a dealer, and that dealer has to comply with certain requirements, and he should be able to sell you a quality firearm that suits your requirements. So Jonathan, let's just start very briefly. What's a firearm dealer?
A firearm dealer is generally a company. It might even be an individual, but mostly some form of company that supplies firearms and generally ammunition to anybody who wants to buy a legally licensed firearm. They acquire them from various places. Generally, I think most of the dealers in South Africa will acquire them from some of the registered and recognized importers, and then take them into their dealer stock in order to be able to sell them.
So people can't see this, but you've got a T-shirt on with a picture of what I would call a fun gun.
Absolutely.
So before we go into the more serious stuff, let's talk about fun guns. What is that on your T-shirt? It looks to me like a bit of a space gun.
Absolutely. One of the modern developments, and let's face it, firearms have always led technology since the very first firearms were developed. There was a continual move to improve technology, and that's actually one of the things that drew me personally into this world. But the picture on my shirt is an Infinity pistol, one of the fantastic examples of the use of technology in firearms today, where a company called Infinity in the USA makes these firearms, each one custom-made to absolutely exacting tolerances. So when you hold and cycle one of these firearms, it's incredibly, incredibly smooth. There's no rattle, no shaking, nothing. Superbly accurate, superbly reliable, out of the box, and absolutely a pleasure to shoot. Designed to shoot super fast. Some of the top competitors in the world use these.
And it's got like a weird and wacky sight on top of it as well.
Yep, these are the modern firearms for the, let's call it the Formula One of sport shooting, open division, are kitted out with compensators on the front of the barrel to help reduce recoil, kind of like a jet going upwards as the bullet goes out the front of the barrel. Pushing the barrel down again enables you to fire your follow-up shots a whole lot quicker. And then to help speed up things further, instead of having to focus on your sights and change your focus between your target and your sights, technology was developed probably 25 years ago called red dot sights. Very commonplace these days, but this sport pioneered them, and they live today on the top of these sporting pistols. And you'll see many of the troops around the world, I think, popularized very much in the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, where the American military is also using these red dot sights on their firearms, but pioneered out of the sport shooting and really great fun to shoot.
And, of course, that leads into the specifics of a dealer, and that is, that's where we go to get these things, isn't it? And a dealer will have a diverse range of products. I happen to know that your specific dealership, Shooting Stuff, specializes in sporting pistols. But a dealer, a licensed dealer, and we'll talk about the licensing in a moment, you should be able to walk into a firearm dealer and he should be able to sell you anything from the space gun on your t-shirt to a hunting rifle to a self-loading rifle for sporting purposes and... Listen up, everybody. A belt-fed machine gun, if necessary. Is that correct?
Believe it or not, yes and no. So the provisions in the Firearms Control Act do allow dealers with certain license conditions to be able to supply prohibited firearms. Generally, all dealers are fully licensed to supply restricted firearms. Those restricted firearms are typically semi-automatic rifles and semi-automatic shotguns, but prohibited firearms are what we know as commonly as machine guns, whether it's a belt-fed Vickers coming out of World War I, which I incidentally had the privilege of firing some of the first shots out of that gun in 100 years at our Collectors Association's meeting at the end of last year. It was a machine gun that was captured in World War I by the Cape Coloured Regiment and ended up in poor condition in storage after a while. And one of the members of the Collectors Association decided to restore it. And it's been a process that's been ongoing for close on 10 years. And he fired the first shots and I had the good privilege to fire the second burst out of the gun.
Let's start with what you need to do to become a licensed firearm dealer, because I personally can't think of anything much more exciting than selling guns and having access to a whole ton of guns. But then I'm biased. So you want to become a dealer in firearms. What are the basic requirements?
There's kind of two processes. So the people need to get the necessary prescribed training and acquire a competency certificate to trade in firearms and ammunition. That involves a training aspect through the Professional Firearms Training Association or corporation, whatever they are, PFTC, and ultimately an application to the police as similar to the normal competency certification.
And what about premises?
So that's the second part. The actual company or the, I guess, person or juristic person that intends to be the firearms dealer, that company needs premises that must be secure, must have the right sort of safes or vaults to secure the firearms, must be protected by an alarm system and so on. And once all of that is in place, then the police may issue a firearm dealer's license that enables the suitably qualified people to be able to trade out of those premises and sell guns to the public.
So we're selling guns. With firearms comes accessories. So what should I see when I walk into a firearm dealer? What should be available to me? And what does a dealer do? What service does a dealer perform that makes them a part of the firearm owning process?
Well, I'm not sure if we've got enough time for all of those things, but in a nutshell, when you visit a firearms dealer, you're going to find firearms often a broad spectrum in some of the bigger dealerships. The smaller niche players will have a much more focused selection available, and ammunition to support the firearms that they're selling, be they shotguns, handguns, or rifles. Some dealers might be focused almost exclusively to the hunting environment and have very few handguns available at all. You might find another one focused on the clay target or bird shooting market and have an almost exclusive array of double-barreled or over-and-under shotguns available for sale and the shotgun ammunition to support those.
What about accessories?
Again, those accessories are going to be focused on the types of firearms or the niche market of that specific dealer, be they carriers for the firearms, sights for some of the fancier rifles and pistols, electronic sights. You can find suppressors for many rifles these days. The suppressors are gaining
a
lot of popularity.
Are you allowed to own a suppressor?
Absolutely. Suppressors are unrestricted in South Africa, and it's remarkable the increase in popularity of them, primarily to make shooting all the more enjoyable for everybody around.
We're talking fun, of course.
Shooting's always fun, Martin.
And making money out of shooting is even more fun because you can do on both ends. sell guns and then have fun shooting them as well.
What we're actually seeing these days more and more is that firearm dealers are spending the money to install generally indoor shooting ranges, often outdoor shooting ranges, co-located with their premises, so that you have the opportunity to evaluate before you buy.
You can test fire.
You can test fire your guns.
Would you recommend that?
Absolutely. The only way to know how a gun works for you is not just to feel the comfort in your hand, but to actually go and fire it and feel the recoil, feel the pulse coming back into your hand.
So on that, I'm going to walk into a firearm dealership. I might be a young lady or a young man, and I want a firearm, and I have an idea that I want a firearm, but how am I going to choose?
You should talk to the people. That's what their main focus is. Find a firearms dealership that offers you sound advice. And as with anything, you need to build up a bit of a relationship and evaluate the advice. So you should for sure go and visit one or two before you make a final decision and make sure that you are comfortable with the advice that you are being offered.
And get to use the firearm?
Ideally, you would like to use the firearm or one very similar to the one you intend to purchase, so that you can really assess the comfort, the concealability if you're wanting to carry it for your own personal protection, the look and the shape if that's an important aspect for you. And you'll see that with the accessories that you were talking about, there's many, many bits that come onto the market.
So I've got a big smile on my face now, because what we've been talking about is the most commonly purchased firearm, which is a firearm for self-defense.
Yeah.
Let's talk about these guns that you mentioned, where we see them on TV and they've got red dots and they've got big suppressors and they've got all sorts of things bolted onto it. Can we get those type of firearms? Can dealers sell those types of firearms?
There are many specialist dealers in the country that do sell these firearms.
We're talking about a semi-automatic rifle.
We're talking about a semi-automatic rifle. Generally, or very few fully automatic firearms exist in South Africa. So pretty much what you see as a military-looking rifle will be semi-automatic. Most of them are probably based on either the American AR-15 system, which the American military use the M4 by Colt.
What about an AK?
And the AK is the other popular one. Generally much cheaper than the American-based system, boringly reliable. There are many, many of those in South Africa that tons of people own just for the pleasure of owning an AK.
So,
completely legal, completely above board. They take them to the shooting range and make holes in targets, shooting steel plates at long range, and come away with a smile broader than yours right now.
So, available to your local dealer, your AK-47 or your AR-15. More seriously, that is what a dealer does. A dealer sells firearms. They sell them legally. They sell them to people who are properly qualified, and you can have all the add-ons or bolt-ons that you want and that your wallet can afford. That's the more serious side of the retail side of firearms.
Yep.
Go to a firearm dealer. Go to one that is a member of the association, the South African Arms and Ammunition Dealers Association, because they've got a constitution and they're expected to behave in a particular way and they're expected to give a particular level of service. That's where we're at now. You can buy your AK if you want. You can buy your AR-15 if you want. They're legal. There are dealers that can sell them. Let's talk a little bit more about the serious side of things, and that is the problems in the industry and how we as an industry are trying to resolve those. And let's start with the police, because we all know that the police are unfortunately a very compromised organization. There's lots of controversy surrounding the current National Commissioner, who's under investigation for corruption. That's Commissioner Sotoli. And we know that we've had past commissioners convicted and sent to jail for corruption as well. And we won't even talk about ministers of police. So what is the environment that you as a firearm dealer and as an association, what is the environment?
I was elected as the chairman of SADA, the Dealers Association, a little more than a year ago. And I entered office with great hope and expectation. You joined me in one or two of the initial meetings that we had with the Central Firearms Registry, where we talked. Nothing really came of that, and I think that is fairly typical of what had happened over the past 15 or 20 years, at least since the Firearms Control Act was implemented in 2004. But at least we had dialogue. Then in January of 2018, the fairly infamous General Botma abruptly retired from the police service and was replaced by General Mamuteti.
I would like to have seen a boot print on his backside, but that's just a personal opinion.
I fully understand that. I think there's place for additional boot prints coming down the line. We had what we thought was a fruitful meeting with General Mamuteti, who had freshly taken over from General Botma. That meeting was in March 2018 and included the senior members of the Central Firearms Registry as well. The meeting was unfortunately the last sensible communication that we ever had from the that group of police officials. All of our attempts to engage with them to resolve the numerous problems that we had again raised.
What problems?
Well, what problems? The first and foremost, probably the biggest problem facing the industry as a whole and all the people trying to license firearms at the moment is the police's refusal. I wanted to say inability, but I don't believe it's that. I think it's a conscious decision
from
that side. I believe it is. We have no proof that it is, but they're simply not processing the firearms dealers' transfer of firearm documents. So part of the legal process that a firearms dealer has is whenever they receive a firearm from whatever source, or whenever a firearm leaves their premises going either to a newly licensed person or being transferred to another dealer or even to a gunsmith, they are obliged to notify the Central Firearms Registry, who controls firearms in South Africa.
Which is a very important function, isn't it?
It is. They're supposed to notify the CFR that the guns are moving, so CFR knows where all the guns are. Sadly, CFR has lost control of firearms in South Africa. They do not know what is where, and we can verify, or we vouch for that by the fact that they simply do not process the documentation to put newly acquired firearms onto the dealer's stock.
So this is quite a startling statement, and I personally subscribe very strongly to that view as well, that the police have lost control of firearms in this country, and it undermines the whole purpose of the legislation.
Absolutely.
And it puts the functional role of a dealer in a very compromised position, doesn't it? Because you are meant to act as the interface between the police, who should control firearms, and the public who want to buy firearms legally.
That is the critical role that dealers fulfill. And one of the important limitations that a dealer faces is that they must be physically in possession of the firearm before they can issue firearm license documentation. And dealers adhere to that. And there's a very good reason for it, because a dealer needs to verify and certain information on the firearm, such as the serial number, a model, other identifying engravings, and they must supply a lot of that information on the actual license form. So it makes sense to be physically in possession. But now, since the Central Firearms Registry has lost control of the firearms, they are now trying to insinuate that dealers may no longer sell firearms that do not correspond to the vastly flawed records of the Central Firearms Registry database.
Which is a problem for all of us.
But absolutely.
But you said that it seems to be that this conduct is intentional, and I would interpret that then to be gun control by stealth, by other means. Because if you can't sell a gun, you sit with the firearm that you paid for, you sit with a firearm that no one can come and purchase, you're tying up your money, you can't resell it, and the consumer can't get access to the product. That to me is quite startling, that instead of coming outright and saying to the firearm dealers and to the public, we don't want any more firearms in South Africa, the police have taken a completely different route. And that route seems to be a stealthy route where they deny it publicly, and we'll talk about that because those denials have appeared in your court case. And yet they also seem to be doing it intentionally. Why do you say that they're doing it intentionally?
Nobody can be this incompetent. The level of incompetence that we're seeing can only come from intent. Clearly capable parts of the police, often the designated firearms officers that you or that each of us as the individual deals with at the police station trying to submit the documentation, they're very helpful. And by and large, they kept the system going in the past. But there was a ruling from the infamous General Botmer to stop the designated firearm officer from catching up the backlog
Updating information.
He stopped it.
So, sorry, but what you're saying to me is a situation where there was a practical process in place that helped the police, helped the information to become more current, and someone said, stop doing that, a police official.
He did. And although that created many, many problems along the way that we've conveyed to the police via the meetings that we attended, via numerous emails and attempts to phone, they simply ignored all of this and more than ignored it, they denied that it even existed.
Well, I checked their phone line yesterday, just by the way, their helpline, and it's been offline for a number of days. And I think that symbolizes the police right now. They're offline. But what about these allegations of deliberate deletion of information by the police? Is there any truth in that?
We have clear proof that information changes randomly and frequently. And again, the extent of it cannot be anything but deliberate. I think in our court papers, we included something of very close to home for you, where one of your rifles was, although you had it with a valid license in your hand, the police system said that you did not have it in around February last year. And then a few weeks after we submitted the court papers, it miraculously appeared on your name.
Well, I'm going to run with that for a moment because I bought the firearm from a licensed dealer. It was imported with an import permit. And you quite correctly point out it's one example of many in the court papers. And unfortunately for the police, they cannot deny this, but they gave us a transaction history of that particular firearm. Mm-hmm. And it shows from that transaction history that they transferred it onto my name after the court papers were served.
Correct.
And I think that symbolizes what we're dealing with here in the sense that the police are tampering with the information system and it comes with many, many problems. The least of which is the fact that it makes the commercial side of selling firearms extremely problematic. And of course, it makes it corrupts their information. And that has led to this loss of control that you've mentioned. I've also been told that they've swapped guns from one dealer to another. And it's not been isolated examples. It's been examples of 1,000 at a time in some instances.
It varies so much and so inconsistently, it actually boggles the mind. At Shooting Stuff at our dealership, we've got a couple of guns that we bought a batch of 5 identical firearms. 4 of them ended up on our books. 1 of them ended up in a completely different dealership. And while the buyer is now battling to get it licensed, it's many months that it's been physically with us, recorded correctly in our register, and the police records show it somewhere else. The police won't fix it except by, believe it or not, we were instructed by one of the police colonels from the Central Firearms Registry that the other dealership must give us a dealer transfer form to get it corrected.
But they don't have the gun.
They don't have the gun, and it would be illegal for them to issue such a form.
So the police have told you to do something illegal?
They did, and I have insisted that any such instruction we must receive in writing. We can't deal or can't react to a verbal thing, and I understand that it's the practical way to make the system keep going, but it's morally wrong.
And legally wrong,
and I have a great problem following instructions like that, and that's why that particular one remains unresolved today.
Well, I think that raises a number of issues. The first issue, of course, is that the dealers are, of course, subject to a very strict regulatory regime.
Yep.
That's in the Firearms Control Act, and you've touched upon those requirements. But I think what we really are going to be talking about is the fact that the dealers are compliant, that regime, the regulatory regime, is breaking down. And
broken, not breaking.
Broken. Thank you. And what that has caused SADA to do, the Dealers Association, is you've kind of had to change into a bit of a political lobbying, maybe even confrontational body, to say to the police, this is not acceptable. You've mentioned the court case, which I, of course, know about. There's many serious allegations in that court case about maladministration and system corruption. And there's also the issue, of course, of what we call electronic connectivity. And that was always intended to be the cornerstone of the Act. The knowledge of where a firearm is supposed to vest in the police, whether it is in a private individual's hands or in a dealer like yourself. And it was meant to be electronic so that changes would be instantaneous. What has happened?
Nothing. Literally nothing. Well, the Act was implemented in 2004. We're now in 2019. So in round numbers, let's make it 15 years. There have been perhaps two or three mediocre, very, very mediocre attempts to talk about electronic connectivity, to say we're trying to do something, but absolutely nothing of substance ever materialized.
So the Act is broken?
That part of the Act is absolutely broken. I think there's lots of other parts of the Act that are broken, such as the whole current fiasco around relicensing, but or trying to get expired licenses reinstated, and let's not go there. We have a whole new episode on that. But there's so many fundamental problems emanating from the loss of control and the, what I can only believe is, deliberate maladministration and just making everything as difficult as possible.
And you're at the coalface as a firearm dealer. This is your daily reality, isn't it?
You know, Martin, what is truly sad is we've got a new president of the country, and all the talk in the country is about growing the economy and creating jobs and getting more money into the fiscus and so on. And the whole firearms industry is a multi-billion rand, a billion with a B. It's a multi-billion rand industry that pays huge import duties on firearms.
And you know, VAT?
And VAT. You know, we talked about why guns are so expensive just before the show started. And if you look at the money that goes to the government in the form of import duties and VAT, it's about 45, very close to 45% on firearms coming into the country gets added to the cost price, and that's a huge amount of money. And here, then we're not even talking about the income tax that the companies are paying on profitable businesses, that individuals are paying for all the salaries that they
employment,
and the employment. You know, there's upwards of 100,000 people employed in the firearms industry, including hunting and ranching and security and so on. And the police are making it so difficult for firearms and firearms owners that this whole industry is absolutely in jeopardy at the moment. Many of our members are facing, experiencing financial hardship. And we've been through this in the 2004 era, where under the previous Act, there were somewhere around 800 firearms dealers in the country, and by the time that Act was, the new Act was really underway, around 2008, 2010, the number of firearms dealers in the country was down to 80, and many, many jobs were lost, the industry shrunk to almost nothing, and we've clawed our way back out of it.
And I think you've touched on, again, a number of issues, and that is what sectors of society and the economy the dealers touch. And the answer is many, many sectors. You mentioned security, for example. A security company has to buy its firearms from a licensed dealer, doesn't it? And that's a major part of the trade. The security industry is it's very large and it's increasing. And many firearms are specifically imported for the security industry, and those companies are struggling to get licenses.
Well, it goes beyond just the firearms. There's the firearms is obviously the hot potato part of it, but value-wise, there's probably more value in the ammunition that the industry is consuming, because that's a repeating process all the time. The security industry needs to train, and they buy huge quantities
of
ammo.
Has to train.
They have to train.
Has to train. That's a legal requirement.
Yep. Well, not only that, you know, the police also buy the ammunition from firearms dealers. In the past, we've supplied to the police ballistics or forensics unit in Pretoria ammunition that they use for testing firearms. And if there's no dealers left to supply any of these things, where are they going to turn to? Because the industry in South Africa for both firearms and ammunition is in a very, very precarious position. The way Denali's struggling, the way Denali's scaled down in the past, and the economics don't allow for many of the smaller private firearms manufacturers to really sustain a business.
Well, I was going to say, we actually really don't have private manufacturer of firearms in this country.
Extremely small scale.
And again,
not worth talking about.
Again, a manufacturer can't sell to the public. He's got to sell through a dealer, or she has to sell
Correct.
Through a dealer. So
Correct.
Again, we've got this very critical, we've got an interface that works on so many different levels. You've got the control level, which is the paperwork. You've got the commercial level. You've got the long-term aspect of sustaining the security industry, the replacement of firearms in the security industry. And you may or may not know this, but the police, their service pistols are supplied by a private dealer in this country.
Yes, because I know Jeff quite well, and he's been supporting the police there for many years.
So the police, in a way, are shooting themselves in the foot, because they
Unintended.
Need private dealers to maintain their law enforcement function. But it seems to have escaped them. They just don't seem to comprehend the problems that they have created.
It's truly mind-boggling, and that's why I say the level of incompetence and the impact of this is so vast that it cannot simply be incompetence. It must be a deliberate effort with instructions to the very top of that part of the police force, probably from the minister down. Whether it involves the president at that level and cabinet and so on, I can't say. I'm not involved in that level, but absolutely the minister must know about it. We've told him about it. We've tried to communicate with him before launching the court case so that they, you know, could hear our pleas and try and help us. But the deathly silence is absolutely the only response that
we've
got.
Well, actually tells us something.
Yeah.
They're ignoring us.
Absolutely.
Let's talk solutions. Let's talk the court case. Let's have a look at the picture that is going to happen in the foreseeable future. What are we going to do? What can we do? What needs to be done in order to fix this mess? Because it sounds to me like it's one unholy mess.
It is one unholy mess, but I still believe it is easily fixable if there is a genuine desire to fix it. The dealers can help in many ways, and in fact, our court case is simply asking that the police are compelled to implement the act correctly. We're not asking for anything strange. We're not asking for changes in legislation. We're just saying, do the job and do the job properly.
Do the job that the law tells you to do.
Absolutely. And that's why it's a simple fix. Having 15 years of experience of the act now, I think we're in a fairly good position to understand what it's about. It was a system that was working well from 2010 through about 2016.
It's because they got the pantsuit off them, just by the way. They had to do something.
Sure, but that was all part of getting understanding of the system and making it work. And then through this deliberate effort from the police's side, they literally pulled the rug from under many people and don't want to talk about it. They don't want to solve the problem, and it's really disappointing. But it's an easy thing to solve, I believe.
I think that encapsulates it. They don't want to solve the problem. The last issue I want to touch on is the fact that firearm dealers inadvertently, through what I call a public service, have found themselves in a situation where they may have a lot of firearms that the police don't view as legal. And that was the situation, I see you're smiling, that was a situation where people wanted to hand in guns either because they didn't renew their license or they forgot, whatever that particular reason may be, or because they've inherited firearms and they haven't licensed them. And many dealers have taken these firearms into stock in good faith with the purpose of making sure that these firearms are properly stored, because dealers have vaults and proper safes. And they've tried to submit documentation. They've tried to regularize their possession. And my understanding is that one of the consequences of this mess is that that paperwork has also not been processed.
I mentioned earlier the drastic reduction in the number of dealers when the new act came in, down to about 80 from to a tenth of what it was. In that process, as dealers closed, firearm stock was transferred, guns were taken in from the public. Often many of these were really without value, because the value of guns back then was very, very low. There was a glut of unwanted firearms on the market, and people were literally just giving them away. All along the way, much of this paperwork, while submitted correctly at the time, was not correctly processed, or what we believe is that there were or have been substantial crashes of the central firearms database regarding the firearms, and the data that was restored was way out of date. So many of the intermediate transactions have been lost. And ultimately, the paperwork supporting all of these things also kept for a typical 5-year period. Often that paperwork was either destroyed after 5 years or got lost when a dealership closed down and the firearms moved and all the paperwork necessarily didn't, and so on. So yes, there are many firearms sitting in dealer stock at the moment with a legitimate paper trail of history, but an incomplete paper trail. And the current attitude of the police is, unless there's a perfect and pristine paper trail, which they can't process, or they've processed and have lost through their system crashes and so on. Without that paper trail, they are refusing to do anything with these. They won't allow them to be relicensed to an individual, so a dealer can't sell them. But the dealers have, without a doubt, clearly identified them to the police over the years through all of the regular inspections that a dealer faces. Typically, every 3 months, the police officials come to inspect and verify that all the firearms in the dealer stock comply or agree with the paper-based register. The fundamental control that a dealer has is a paper book, handwritten, where changes may not be erased. Anything that's changed is crossed out. So all of that history is well documented and clearly there. And despite being inspected and these firearms acknowledged, the central part of the system, the central firearms register, won't allow them to be processed.
So I think overall, a very, very bleak, dismal situation.
But it's a new year, Martin. We have to look to the positive side. It is a bleak picture, but I think there is some light at the end of the tunnel.
With the police in the middle. Well, you, as the dealer in the middle.
I think the dealers are in the middle. The police are on the one side being obstructive. The clients and the public out there are feeling very, very frustrated that they can't get their firearm license application submitted. And let's face it, even when they do get these things submitted after great perseverance, there's a whole spate of irrational refusals also going on, and that's another topic of its own, you know, that we can talk about some more. And it's extremely disheartening, because the vast majority of these irrational refusals are subsequently overturned on appeal.
Yet the solution is simply that the police must have the mindset to fix it.
Until that happens, I believe we're really facing an uphill battle. We'll continue persevering, because it's in all of our interests to enjoy the gun fun.
Just say yes.
Yes.
CliffCentral.com.